The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and criminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes, and welcome. It is Tuesday, January 18th, 2011, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for our little podcast here. 1 hour of news talk, interviews, information, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. Podcast as the Normal Daily Audio Stash on iTunes or on demand at stash.normal.org. Followed by another 60 minutes of Toker Talk Radio right here at Normal Show Live, where you can join me and our crew discussing the cannabis issues of the day. And speaking of our crew, let's welcome our engineer, the maestro, Ganja John.
It's going to be one of those days, Russ.
It's going to be a heck of a day, a heck of a week for me. You can tell I'm totally excited about the upcoming Packers-Bears NFC Championship. I couldn't be more thrilled.
The Bears.
181 games these two teams have played against each other since 1921, and they've only met once in the playoffs. In 1941, the week after Pearl Harbor, these two teams played, and the Bears won that championship game, that playoff game. So, second time ever.
Wow.
Yeah, second time ever. Totally excited about that. And, of course, also joining us from our virtual studios in beautiful Grass Story, Oregon, is the lovely and talented Cannabis Carrie.
You're such a Packers historian, Russ. It's wonderful.
Well, you know, your team is alive as well. The New York MFJETS.
Unbelievable. Yes. I haven't really followed football too much this year. I've caught a couple of games. But I definitely caught that playoff game. Fantastic
news. Oh, yeah. And you know, that's Steve Bloom's team as well out at celebstoner.com. So,
of course.
Yeah.
Excellent.
We got to get us some sort of Normal Show Live and Celeb Stoner and Cannabis Carry bet going on. Hey, also, speaking of Cannabis Carry and Ganja John and myself, Ganja John came up with a great tune. We're going to play this in the second hour that actually shouts out to us, a rap tune that shouts out to the three of us, Carrie.
It does.
Really? You know, Cannabis Cure wrote that tune that gave us a shout-out. Is that one?
No, it's not that one.
It's
a hip-hop tune this time. So I can check that off my bucket list.
That's right. We're going to do that in the second hour. But coming up on our first hour for Normal Show Live today, at half past, we're going to speak with Tom Dobert from Montana Patients and Families United at mtpfu.org. There are lawmakers in the state of Montana that want to repeal the medical marijuana law. Tom Dobert will be here to talk about that. And at 45 past in our radical rant, I'm going to take Sun Sentinel columnist Nicole Brochu to task for her reefer madness, a great set of debunking coming up in the radical rant today. At 20 after, we get our Electric Tuesday music from Cannabis Cure UK. But before we get to all of that, our hemp headlines with Cannabis Carry. What's in the news today?
Well, today the hemp headlines are going to stay up in the northwest area of the country. We are also going to talk about a Montana legislation bill, not the one to appeal, but another one. Also, we're going to talk about a story that's coming out of Oregon. You've mentioned it once or twice before, but we're going to go into it a little in-depth today about the gun laws and where they intersect with the medical marijuana laws. And also, we're going to go to Idaho, where they have decided to try and outlaw blunts. We'll see how that's all playing out.
All right. Great show coming up today. So please stick around. It's Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation. We're available on iTunes. Look under the News, Government, and Organizations podcast, or just go to our blog at stash.normal.org. We've also got a new Twitter feed at @normal_show_live. Subscribe to that for show updates. We're right back after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
In today's busy world, we're inundated by advertising for all types of pharmaceuticals that come with a laundry list of potential side effects. Shouldn't you have better medical choices? Natural alternatives to pills pushed by Big Pharma? At Alternative Medical Choices, you could choose natural, safe, and effective alternative therapies that are right for your budget without nasty side effects. Cannabis, or marijuana, has been a legal medicine in the Pacific Northwest since 1998. Our doctors will help determine your qualifications for a medical marijuana recommendation in Oregon, no matter where you live. Our massage therapists will ease your aches and stress with soothing hemp seed oil or cannabis-infused massage salves. We also offer acupuncture, Reiki, and other alternative health therapies. Call Alternative Medical Choices in Portland, Oregon at 503-288-5579 or visit our website at www.altmedchoices.com. We specialize in out-of-state recommendations. That's www.altmedchoices.com or call 503-288-5579.
And now, a message from former President George W. Bush to remind the American people of our responsibility in our nation's war on American citizens, non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
That's right, America, use less drugs. Put down the Prozac, the Vioxx, and the Levitra, and turn to the herb. Use less drugs. Our national policy is no longer just say no. It's now just slow down.
You get me too high. I overanalyze. If you've ever been too high, then you can sympathize. You get me too high. And I start to fly if I said some silly thing.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carry.
Members of the Montana Board of Medical Examiners spoke out about a new medical marijuana bill designed to tighten the conditions for which people could use medical marijuana. On Friday, the board stepped up and said they had sharp criticism for some of the wording of House Bill 68. The bill, sponsored by Representative Diane Sands, a Democrat from Missoula, contains some measures that the board recommended last year to an interim committee working on the issue. One of their recommendations requiring two doctors to sign off on medical marijuana use for patients with severe and chronic pain made it into the language of the bill. But it was the laundry list of qualifying medical conditions that board members took issue with during a conference call to discuss the pending legislation. They say the wording would open up the door to many more medical marijuana patients under current law. Dr. Kristen Splodgen, the board's secretary, pointed out that the listing of hepatitis C and inflammatory or degenerative arthritis as a debilitating medical condition would permit a doctor to recommend medical marijuana use. She said, quote, probably 40% of the population has some type of degenerative arthritis, and if they don't have chronic pain with it, I don't see that as an indication for medical marijuana use. It would be better to narrow this and not expand this, unquote. Board members also did not like an arbitrary provision that would allow medical marijuana providers to furnish up to 2 ounces of marijuana to a patient every 30 days, changing the previous maximum possession of 1 ounce at a given time. The bill would establish a new licensing authority in the Department of Revenue. Board members did not support measures in the bill to prevent doctors recommending marijuana from also having a financial interest in the distribution. The House and Human Services Committee will discuss HB 68 on January 21st. The board said that it does support House Bill 82, also sponsored by Representative Sands, which would require the board to report back to the legislature any complaints against medical professionals regarding medical marijuana.
Well, this is another one of those situations where we have a medical marijuana law that's passed, and the people that don't like marijuana think that it's only for cancer patients. And then when tens of thousands of people sign up to use medical marijuana, they freak out. Oh my God, we got too many people using medical marijuana. What did that lady say? 40% of the people have some sort of arthritis that could be used or treated as, was it 40%, Carrie?
Yes, I have no idea where she got that statistic, but yes, she said 40% in her quote have some kind of degenerative arthritis associated with pain.
Yeah, well, if you ask me, that's just telling us we have too few people using medical marijuana in Montana. But this is what it's always about when we've got prohibition in effect, is they feel the need to narrow it down. They feel that if too many people are using marijuana, why, there must be criminality going on. Some people who don't deserve it are getting to use it, when in fact, we should be encouraging more people with hepatitis C, with arthritis, with these conditions, to be turning to safe, natural, effective, non-toxic, very slightly, hardly addictive cannabis instead of the drugs that we push on these people for arthritis and hep C. Always trying to tighten the conditions. And this lady talking about how, they might have arthritis, but they might not have pain, so it shouldn't be indicated for it. This brings me up to the subject of off-label prescription drug use. I think I remember the statistic of something like 2/3 or 60% of the uses or the prescriptions prescription drugs in this country are used for purposes that aren't indicated on the label. For example, there is a drug that is used for prostate health that a lot of men get and use it as hair treatment. There's drugs for, what was the drug you were on? The drug for the heart?
It's a blood pressure medication. Minoxidil was developed as a blood pressure medication, but it made people grow hair, so they made it into Rogaine.
Yeah, so there's all sorts of off-label use with all of these dangerous, toxic, addictive pharmaceuticals that we don't seem to have a problem with, but the minute somebody wants to try to use cannabis for something that's not in a limited, narrow set of defined conditions under the state law, they think there's something wrong with it. And this other part of the bill, having two doctors to sign off for chronic pain. Yeah, that's what we need. We need to send people to more expensive doctor visits when, what do we have, 45 million Americans that don't have health care, don't have any sort of insurance coverage to go see those doctors, take more money out of the poor patient's pocket. And many times these patients are turning to medical marijuana because they don't have insurance. They can't afford the prescription medications. And marijuana is so much cheaper for them to be able to use. So yeah, let's have them spend even more money going to visit two doctors when it's already tough enough to find one doctor who will recommend for pain because of all of this demonization of drug-seeking behavior and supposedly doctor shopping. This has got to stop, and again, the only way it can stop in the long term is to end marijuana prohibition even for healthy people.
Do medical marijuana patients have the same gun rights as their fellow countrymen? That's the question that will be brought up before the Oregon State Supreme Court on March 3rd. The patient, Cynthia Willis, was denied a concealed handgun permit by Jackson County Sheriff Mike Winters in 2008, arguing that granting her the permit would violate federal laws prohibiting drug users from legally possessing guns. Willis's attorney, Lee Berger, says that the sheriff has been attempting to discriminate against patients by not issuing any permits. In a brief filed with the Supreme Court, Assistant County Counsel Ryan Kirchhoff argues that Winters denied the application for the permit because marijuana use violates federal law. At the heart of the case is the U.S. Gun Control Act of 1968 that specifically forbids anyone who uses or is addicted to a controlled substance from having a firearm. The Jackson County woman admitted to Winters when she filed her application for a concealed gun permit that she was a medical marijuana patient. In the court brief, Kirchhoff argues that an earlier court of appeals that ruled in Cynthia Willis's favor would force the sheriff to issue a concealed weapons permit to a person who would admit to using methamphetamine. He says that when there is a conflict between state and federal law, that federal law should prevail. The state Supreme Court only hears about 8% of the cases appealed from the lower courts, so this case is significant. The appeals court back in June concluded that the sheriff would not violate the Federal Gun Control Act by issuing a handgun permit to Willis based on Oregon's concealed handgun licensing laws. The court determined that the federal act gives states the authority to set their own rules for gun ownership and that the concealed weapons permit by itself does not authorize a person to actually possess a handgun. Oregon's permit law provides a license to conceal a weapon, an action that would be illegal without the permit. A brief filed with the Supreme Court by Attorney General Kroger stated, quote, "There is no basis to believe that possession of a concealed handgun license will result in a violation of federal firearms law," unquote. And Willis isn't alone in her opinion. The ACLU argues that 39 states have their own laws regulating the permitting of firearms. And from Oregon Revised Statute 166.29, the sheriff is compelled to issue the concealed handgun license to Willis because she complied with all the requirements of the statute. The ACLU wrote, quote, "The sheriff wants this court's authorization for him to go beyond the statutory requirements and make his own determination as to whether the person is qualified under federal law to own a handgun. Both sides are gearing up for their March appointment with the state Supreme Court. We, of course, will keep you posted."
I want every Glenn Beck listening, Tea Party supporting NRA member out there who thinks that marijuana should still remain illegal to think about coming down with cancer and having your doctor tell you the best way to relieve your nausea and pain would be the use of medical marijuana. And I want you to realize that that recommendation in the state of Oregon means the sheriff may take away your guns. Now, I don't want to get into the gun control, gun debate, gun rights, and all that Second Amendment stuff, but I do want to focus on this part of it. And this is just, you know, appalling to me that we would toss away someone's constitutional Second Amendment rights based on using a legal medical supplement here, using medical marijuana. This is a country where we have states, and I think I saw Louisiana was one of these states, but I can't remember. It was a slideshow I was looking at on the net, where they have a drive-through daiquiri shop. Sorry, you can get in your car, drive up to a drive-through window and get a daiquiri. I remember when I was in Texas, there was drive-through liquor stores where you get a keg of beer just dropped into your car, drive-through with that, and then you can go to the Walmart and pick yourself up any sort of gun you want. You can pick up all sorts of ammunition you want, go through the background checks for that. But by God, if you're smoking a joint to ease chemotherapy, we can't trust you. You could get drunk as a skunk, drink all you like, you know, on the weekends. In fact, I know people that go hunting and they take, you know, cases of beer when they go hunting. That's all perfectly cool. But if you're a medical marijuana patient wanting a concealed firearm, maybe because, oh, I don't know, marijuana is still illegal and it's worth, you know, $300 an ounce out on the streets, and people like to break into medical marijuana patients' homes and beat them up and rob them of their plants. If anyone needs a firearm for protection, it's these people, and you want to take their rights away? Oregon Supreme Court, you need to make the right decision on this and protect the firearm rights of our patients.
Idaho is looking to clamp down on the sales of tobacco wrappers. Legislation introduced on Monday into the Senate Judiciary and Rules Committee would make it illegal to sell, manufacture, or distribute roll-your-own cigar wrappers in the state. The bill, sponsored by Senator Denton Darrington, a Republican from Delco, would make blunt wrappers have the same status as other drug paraphernalia. Shops, manufacturers, or anyone owning a blunt wrapper could potentially be charged with a crime if the legislation passes. But this law hasn't come at the urging of a soccer mom who found the tobacco product in her kid's drawer. The pressure to write legislation is coming from the tobacco industry itself. Russell Westerberg, who speaks on behalf of the Cigar Association of America, says that the wraps have no legitimate use and are primarily used to roll marijuana into small cigars or cigarettes. Westerberg says that a blunt can mask the odor of marijuana and give the appearance of no wrongdoing by its smoker. As the legislation was introduced, Westerberg brought in samples of blunt wrappers, and lawmakers passed packages around to inspect them and get acquainted with the products. Darrington said that the blunt wrappers are now being used to smoke the recently illegal spice, or so-called synthetic marijuana, as well as marijuana, Schedule I drug, according to the federal government. Already in place in the state, drug paraphernalia laws do not allow any head shops to flourish. In Idaho, it is unlawful to possess drug paraphernalia with the intent to use it. Idaho defines drug paraphernalia as anything that can be used to introduce drugs into your body or to manufacture or deliver drugs. Common paraphernalia items in Idaho: baggies, pipes, bongs, pen tubes, syringes, and scales. The maximum penalty for possession of paraphernalia is 1 year in jail and a $1,000 fine or both. The new legislation would add the tobacco wrappers to that list and presumably remove them from the shelves of tobacco and cigar shops around the state.
Well, Well, gee, I guess apple bongs are paraphernalia in Idaho, too, as well. Don't be poking any holes in any apples, folks. And let me get this straight here about this tobacco executive. Don't think he's got your best interests at heart, Idahoans. The reason he wants to ban the tobacco wraps is to force the marijuana smokers to buy the tobacco-filled Swisher Sweets, to buy the cigars that already have the tobacco in them, scoop out half of the tobacco that they just paid for, and add some cannabis to it. That's exactly what's going on here. It's to boost the sales of tobacco products.
I think we're going to take a tobacco-free break.
Yeah, they're not fooling me, John.
Never.
Never trust a tobacco executive. They always got profit in mind. We're right back after this.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Normal Show Live reminds you to never consent to a search. If you're holding and you consent, in most states you will be arrested immediately and you will go to jail. If you don't consent to a search, police may try to intimidate you by threatening to bring in drug-sniffing dogs or try to fool you by saying things will go easier if you consent. Yeah, easier for them, sure. Stand your ground, refuse the search, and ask the officer if you're free to go. If they still detain you and eventually find your contraband, you'll be no more busted than if you had allowed the search. But by refusing the search, your attorney has a chance to win your acquittal before a judge. If you consent to the search, your attorney's hands are tied. You can find a list of Normal Legal Committee attorneys specializing in marijuana cases by visiting the Find a Lawyer link at normal.org.
Ever wonder how often to change your bong water? The most effective method for making pot brownies? The best destinations for a ganja getaway? How to hide herb in your car? Whether to grow your own? How precisely to legalize it? Or how something as wonderful as marijuana ever got to be illegal in the first place? Finally, you can find all these answers and much more in the official High Times Pot Smokers Handbook, featuring 420 things to do when you're stoned. Since 1974, High Times Magazine has covered marijuana in all its aspects and wonders, from cultivation to legalization to the herb's enduring and exalted place in popular culture. Packed with inside information, the official High Times Pot Smokers Handbook rolls all of this collected wisdom together into a single indispensable ganja guide, including an entertaining look at marijuana's history, profiles of herb-friendly travel destinations and festivals, favorite potluck recipes from the High Times staff, smoking skills, advocacy and activism, essential marijuana movies and songs, profiles of famous cannabis strains, comprehensive growing information, celebrity endorsements, and much more. This is truly, finally, the ultimate guide to green living.
If you like what you hear and would like to donate to the cause, send your check or money order to Normal Show Live, 1600 K Street Northwest, Suite 501, Washington, D.C., 20006. Your donation is a tax-deductible gift to the Normal Foundation and will be used to help support this online media. Thank you.
It's time for your Daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we bring you tunes for Electric Tuesday, our segment featuring the best of modern electronic music in the genres of dance, new age, house, and electronica, brought to you by Greg in Surrey, Sussex, England, and Cannabis Cure UK. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
Hey there, what's up, tokers? Kit Borrington from Exeter in Britain is Sattersmith. This track, Hybrid, is a perfect set of vibrations to accompany a smooth smoke on that green goodness. We would like to give a big up to all the herbalists in the Southwest UK. This ambience and chilled out nature of this toca tune is definitely what the doctor ordered. Trust me, I know, I'm the cannabis cure. From across the pond for Normal Show Live on Electric Tuesday. Enjoy. Peace out.
Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing Media, and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Also by Barry McCaffrey, General Barry McCaffrey, I should say, retired general, military analyst at NBC, and most importantly for this conversation, national drug former national drug policy director, very familiar with this conversation.
Normal Show Live, where the truth about marijuana gets more than a minute to speak.
General, I'm going to begin with you.
Everybody's got a habit, some good, some bad, to reach the comfort zone. Some of people have all kinds of people around. Some people can't hang alone. Whatever it is, whatever you like, you're gonna make it through your afternoon.
Hi, I'm Keith Straub, the founder of Normal. In all the years since 1970 that I've been fighting marijuana prohibition, I've learned that drug warriors love to confuse the public with statistics. Lately, they've claimed that there are more teens enrolled in drug treatment for marijuana than ever before. It's a statement that, while true, is intentionally misleading. What they don't tell you is that marijuana arrests have skyrocketed to over 800,000 arrests per year. They also don't tell you that we've gone from a few dozen drug courts in the 1990s to over 2,500 drug courts today. The kicker is that those drug courts sentence teens routinely to drug treatment for marijuana, whether they need drug treatment or not. So they arrest more people for pot, require them to enter drug treatment, then claim the higher treatment numbers justify more pot arrests. It's an absurd proposition, but no more absurd than banning a plant. Learn the facts about pot. Visit norml.org today.
Normal, unlike any other marijuana or drug reform organization, is built from the ground up by grassroots activists. We are the Marijuana Smokers Lobby, and we aren't just anti-prohibition, we're pro-marijuana. Every week, we take some time to talk to the citizens of local Normal chapters across the country and around the world, as well as others who are working to make a difference in the fight to end adult marijuana prohibition in this segment we call Grassroots Activism.
All right, welcome back, everyone. We're glad to be joined by telephone with Tom Dobear from Montana Patients and Families United. And Tom, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Russ. Great to be here.
You know, it seems like
anything's better than being at the Capitol right now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was just going to say, you know, it seems like every year we come around to this time of year and the new legislature gets seated, and in the medical marijuana states, that's like open season for them to try to restrict or change the medical marijuana laws they don't like. Tell us what's happening. What are the patients there in Montana fighting this year?
Well, we, Russ, unfortunately, are facing extraordinary backlash and very well-organized opposition for the very first time in the history of this issue. Little background, what happened was that very shortly after the end of our last legislative session in spring 2009, some folks started putting on traveling so-called cannabis caravan clinics in hotels and even old John Deere warehouses, where they were able to supply physician recommendations to as many as 1,000 or more patients in a single day, often with no medical records, no exam, no nothing, over the internet with licensed physicians operating from other states. And this, along with flagrant public smoking and outrageous behavior really on the part of a small number of folks, incited huge backlash to the point where we are now looking at least 24 bills specific to medical marijuana at the legislature, almost all of them punitive, even draconian, with the most extreme example being several bills that would repeal the law outright.
Wow, that's just amazing. So the backlash that you refer to these traveling clinics, the public smoking and so on, would it be fair to say this backlash is more based on what's happening in Montana than any sort of scaremongering about what's going on in other states like California?
Well, I think, you know, folks can point to California and even Colorado as well and say, hey, look, you know, this isn't just Montana that's having problems. But fundamentally, the backlash, the opposition stems from craziness right here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, we've gone from having about 4,000 registered patients in spring of 2009 to on the order of 30,000 registered patients. More than 20,000 of them obtained their recommendations through these traveling over the web clinics.
You know, in other issues that are contentious among the public and lawmakers, we often hear the cry of, we don't need new regulations, we just need to enforce the regulations we have today. What are the regulations today with Montana with respect to these traveling clinics, the exams and so on? And is there any way to just better enforce that rather than to come up with new, or is that what these bills are trying to do, is coming up with new ways to enforce that?
Well, a little bit of both. I would say that existing law is deficient in offering opportunities to regulate this sort of thing. The clinics that have been occurring, that I mentioned, don't have to be licensed at all. Only the specific physicians are licensed. And the Board of Medical Examiners here can do nothing until or unless someone files a complaint against a specific named physician. And so if you think about it, you can imagine that the patients who are receiving these recommendations are going to be inclined to file a complaint. Ironically, I know that law enforcement has sent people undercover to these clinics and taught afterwards how they got recommendations for medical cannabis after 20 seconds on a webcam with no medical records, and yet they didn't file a complaint against the physician who did that. And I do find that mystifying. But there are some proposals, and in fact, the proposal that would get at some of these problems most completely is something we're developing, not something being proposed by the opposition. I think one of the problems we're having and what we fear the most is that the legislature, on the one hand, will overreact to the problems and at the same time also misunderstand their true source. So with these clinics, for example, there's a perception that a great many of the patients who obtained recommendations didn't suffer medical conditions to warrant it. Most of them are getting recommendations in the chronic pain category. And so rather than focus where they ought to, I think, on tightening up the rules for doctors and making it more rigorous, the process by which a doctor decides whether to make a recommendation, the proposals we're seeing, a lot of them target chronic pain patients. One proposal would require a chronic pain patient to have a recommendation from two physicians, not just one. Another proposal would allow chronic pain patients to obtain a recommendation only if their pain were first proven to be intractable and resistant to other approaches, at which point a physician could make a recommendation, but that recommendation would have to be reviewed and approved by a so-called independent panel of three other physicians.
Yeah, it's one of those deals where they make you take the Vicodin, the Oxycontin, the Percocet. You got to try all of those first. And then if they don't work, then maybe we might give you cannabis if we can get a doctor to sign off on a board to approve it. That's kind of what you're talking about in that, right?
And yeah, exactly. It's sort of like if you're limping, you can't get a recommendation, but if you're crawling in agony, maybe you can.
Right. We're speaking with Tom Gilbert from Montana Patients and Families United. You can check them out on the web at mtpfu.org. I just wanted to make sure people got that website address. Tom, sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's okay. Well, I was just going to say there are a bunch of other kinds of bills that are causes for great concern. There's a hearing tomorrow morning on one, for example, that would find a person guilty of a DUI, driving under the influence, merely for having any cannabis metabolites in their body. And yet, ironically, that same bill would exempt anyone with prescription drug metabolites in their body, regardless of actual impairment. So, again, we're looking at a lot of overreaction, draconian, punitive proposals that target medical marijuana patients.
Yeah, it's the backlash that I've been predicting and fearing in medical marijuana with many of these entrepreneurial types trying to take advantage of every loophole or shortcoming in the law, and then a public that voted in, and what was the vote in Montana? 62%, 63%?
That 62. We set a national record at the time when we became the 10th state.
Right, something that's enormously popular with most Montanans, and then they feel, I think a lot of them feel that they were duped or it's being abused, and this is coming at the legislature, though. What's your gauge of the public's reaction to this stuff? Is it coming from the public?
Some of it is. There's no question. I mean, I think what happened was not a broad public-wide backlash, but primarily a religious radical right-wing backlash that was able to get traction in opposition to medical marijuana because of the flagrant lunacy that some people were engaging in. I think more broadly, there's still strong public support for the underlying concept, but a great many of us, myself included, I've been very public and vocal for more than a year now, agreeing with law enforcement, local government, and other kinds of officials who say that too much of what we're seeing was neither intended by those of us who proposed the law, nor is it acceptable to us. You know, we are seeing a handful of gross opportunists exploiting the laws, loopholes, and gray areas for their own profit and peering ends. And unfortunately, in my own personal opinion, some of those folks are mentally ill too. So it's been a real struggle, very frustrating for us here.
Is there any of these bills, these proposals coming up that MTPFU would support and call for people to take a second look at and supporting?
Well, yeah, there's an interim committee bill that the interim health committee last year developed that would create a lot of different kinds of regulations, most of which we think are good. There are a number of features in that bill that we don't like at all, but the two-doctor recommendation for chronic pain is one example. That bill, it's House Bill 68, would also forbid anyone on probation regardless of medical circumstances from being a patient. There are a number of things about that bill we don't like, but we are going to support it at least initially in hopes that we can approve it and that it might become a basis for a partial solution. There are two Senate bills that we're going to support too. One of them is Senate Bill 154, and it focuses solely on growers, and it would create a rigid licensing system and oversight with strict accountability and reporting, inspections by the Department of Revenue. We basically like the regulatory outlines. It's the most strict proposal on the drawing board yet as regards regulating growers. A lot of folks don't like the bill, and it wasn't our idea, but the sponsor has included a 10% tax on gross proceeds or gross revenue received by growers. To pay for the regulation as well as to provide revenue to the state more broadly. That actually, again, a lot of our folks don't like that aspect of the proposal, but it has successfully begun to change the conversation in the Capitol building because Montana's facing tough budget balancing challenges this session. And cannabis producers may be the only source of new revenue.
Yeah, really.
To the state. And that's, you know, as I said, it's changing the conversation.
That's SB 154, right?
Correct.
Okay.
And there's another bill still in development, not yet introduced. At the moment, it's called LCE 991. And that is our bill. And we're still deciding on some of its provisions. but it's going to be basically a science and standards bill, trying to be smarter and more rigorous in controlling the professionalism of the physicians when they make recommendations, as well as bringing higher standards of professionalism to the rest of the so-called industry that the medical marijuana law has spawned here.
Okay, so we'll keep an eye on that. And when you get that bill ready to be introduced, make sure you get back in touch with us, Tom. We'll have you on the show to discuss that a little further. Tom Dobert is with the Montana Patients and Families United. It's at mtpfu.org. And you mentioned something about a hearing tomorrow. Is there some information for our listeners if they want to attend and support you guys?
Yeah, it's a hearing tomorrow morning on House Bill 33. It's an extreme driving under the influence bill that would basically ban patients from driving, or it would put any patient driving at risk of getting a DUI per day just for having any detectable amount of THC in their system, which, as we know, a patient is likely to have even as long as 4 to 6 weeks after their last use of cannabis.
Right, right. There's a lot of that going around all over the United States, these zero-tolerance DUID bills, and we're glad you got your focus on those. And we want to encourage people in Montana to turn out for that hearing if you can. Bodies in the seats make a difference, folks. Those lawmakers got to look you in the eye. It can change the world, really. Get involved with your local Normal chapter and with Montana Patients and Families United, mtpfu.org. Tom Dobert, thank you so much for joining us here on Normal Show Live.
Thank you, Russ. Thanks very much for all you do.
76% of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers. And nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana. And over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and co-workers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Stropp, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
Legalize marijuana? Prove it. Join NORML today at NORML.org, and your donation will help us spread the growing truth about cannabis. Free speech ain't free, you know.
Free the ganja tree, it's the healing of the nation. Free the Cali weed, good for meditation. Free the pot smokers, the arena delight. Lighting up the chalice, they keep no malice.
The healing of marijuana.
Come on, come on, come on, say.
Free the marijuana.
Hear me, say.
Free the marijuana.
Yar, the army pirates here.
The Pirate King.
You know why we pirates love the NORML show? Because it's always smoking, matey.
This is NORML Show Live.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Welcome back, everyone, and you know me, I'm stamping out reefer madness in the media everywhere I can find it, and last Friday, I got another opportunity from the Los Angeles Times. Now, to be fair, this is a columnist named Nicole Brochu, who writes for the Fort Lauderdale Sun Sentinel, so coming from Florida, I can understand why her reefer madness might be a more virulent strain, but let me get to some of this article here, and we'll get right into the reefer madness debunking. She begins by saying, "It's difficult to raise the topic of marijuana usage in America today without somehow touching off an intense debate over whether this relatively mild but still harmful drug should be decriminalized or even fully legalized. That's how much the pro-pot crowd has hijacked the national conversation over the nation's ongoing struggle with drug use." Hijacked. Yes, we've hijacked the national conversation. I always find that funny when she's complaining about hijacking the national conversation. She's got 225,000 circulation at the Fort Lauderdale Sun Sentinel and 725,000 circulation in the LA Times. So here we have a reefer mad mainstream media columnist with almost a million readers complaining that we're dominating the conversation. Geez, it reminds me when the drug czar with a $421 million annual budget complains about the well-funded pro-legalization forces out there. Yeah. Hey, look, hijacked in this sense means told the public the truth. Isn't it remarkable how the national conversation leans toward legalization when people know cannabis doesn't lead to heroin, doesn't cause cancer, doesn't cause lung disease, doesn't make you stupid, doesn't get you addicted, and doesn't make your girlfriend leave you for an alien? Now, Nicole continues in her conversation here about an opinion piece of a drug treatment psychologist who noticed the spike in teen pot smoking and attributed it to the growing tolerance of marijuana use. Then she notes the University of Michigan study showing that teen exposure to anti-drug messages has nosedived over the past 7 years when teens also reported that those messages actually worked. Well, folks, that's stretching a bit. What the report found is, quote, "Between 2003 and today, the proportion of 8th, 10th, and 12th graders that agreed the commercials made them to a great extent less favorable toward drugs remained fairly stable." Since 2003, pretty stable on how those commercials worked. Now, that there are less of those commercials is because the Government Accountability Office in 2006 found, quote, "Between 1998 and 2004, Congress appropriated over $1.2 billion to the Drug Czar's Office for national anti-drug media campaigns, and that, quote, the campaign was not effective in reducing youth drug use either during the entire period of the campaign or during the period from 2002 to 2004 when the campaign was redirected and focused on marijuana use," end quote. $1.2 billion flushed down the toilet. So basically, kids today have the same reaction to ineffective anti-pot commercials that they had in 2003. Now, Nicole continues, "Perhaps it's not at all relevant that after a decade's decline in pot smoking, the same study also found a spike in marijuana usage among teens last year, with more high school seniors lighting up joints than cigarettes." Yet, back in 2003, before the teens' exposure to anti-drug messages nosedived, 21.2% of seniors used cannabis monthly. This year, it's 21.4%. So in 2006, 3 years into the nosedive, 18.3% were using monthly. So how come no column about how less ads led to a plummet in use in that time? She continues, "The numbers and the trend are not in dispute. What is up for debate, and a heated one at that, is what to do about it." Well, actually, there is quite a dispute about your trend regarding cannabis use. About 1 in 5 high school seniors has been using cannabis monthly, a trend that holds true back to 1995. It's never fluctuated from around 3 percentage points one way or the other. The high point, 23.7% in 1997, 18.3% is the low point in 2006, and today it's about 21.4%. The trend that is impressively on the decline is teen cigarette smoking. In 1995, 1 in 3 high school seniors smoked cigarettes monthly, a figure that got as high as 36.5% in 1997. Since then, about 1 in 5 seniors smoke cigarettes, 19.2%. Yes, more high school kids are lighting up joints than cigarettes, but that's not because more kids smoke pot. It's because much fewer kids smoke cigarettes. She continues, But to suggest that legalizing marijuana is somehow an answer to society's drug problems, that regulating its sale and distribution would actually lead to a reduction in usage, especially among youth, defies sober reasoning. Legalization proponents like to point out that the Netherlands, with its liberal drug policy, has a lower drug rate than America's, but they neglect to tell you that the country's marijuana usage among 18 to 20-year-olds nearly tripled after legalization, at a time when usage among adolescents in the United States decreased steadily, according to the medical journal Pediatrics. Wait a minute. You mean the increase in 18 to 20-year-old adults visiting an 18 and older legal coffee shop in the Netherlands is the argument you want to use among 16 to 17-year-old adolescent children in America will use it more? That adults will use it more when it's legal and they can go to an adult-only place? That's your argument for why kids would use it more. Okay. Especially when you think in America it would probably be an 18 age. It would probably be a 21 age. That's the argument you want to stick with? Look, I find it funny that the Pediatrics article you cited, you neglected to include their findings that, quote, decriminalization of marijuana in a number of states from 1975 to 1980 apparently had no effect on high school students' beliefs and attitudes about marijuana or on their use of the drug during those years, end quote. And why don't you just tell us what the rate of cannabis use is among those Dutch adolescents in the so liberal tolerant Netherlands? Because the latest figures I found from the European Monitoring Center for Drugs and Drug Addiction says 28% of Dutch youth aged 15 to 16 have tried cannabis in their lifetime, 15% used it last month, and 49% say it's easy or fairly easy to get. Let's compare that to American 10th graders. 33% have used it in their lifetime, that's 5% more. 16.7% say they've used it this month, that's 1.7% more. And 69.4% of 10th graders say it's easy to get. In America, where you can be locked up and cannabis is completely illegal, 69.4% of kids age 14 to 15 in America say it's easy to get, whereas less than half of Dutch kids that age say it's easy to get when they have legal coffee shops. And extrapolate that to the 12th graders, the 16 and 17-year-olds in America, 43.8% have used cannabis, 21.4% are using it this month, and 82.1% say it's easy or fairly easy to get. 82% easy or fairly easy to get. Netherlands, 49%. Let's go on. She says, putting pot up for sale in convenience stores next to cigarettes and beer will only make it more accessible and more acceptable, not to mention more affordable, creating more consumers, not less. Youth will be the most vulnerable. Alaska's experiment with legalization is any example. The state's youth started smoking at twice the rate of those nationally, convincing Alaska to recriminalize marijuana in 1990, according to the DEA.
Yeah, see, for the reefer mad prohibitionists like Nicole Brochu, it's either lock people up for smoking pot or pot up for sale in the convenience stores next to cigarettes and beer. They can accept that legal drugs is a pretty broad concept, you know, everything between over-the-counter aspirin to completely controlled and prescription-only morphine. They can accept that, but when it comes to cannabis, it's either completely illegal or buds next to bud and jazz cigarettes next to the regular ones at the 7-Eleven, right? That's all, that's the only choices there are. Now, they criticize the Netherlands model of adults-only coffee houses without noticing they're not exactly convenience stores. And in fact, in a Dutch coffee house, you can't even see the menu for the cannabis without pushing a button. They have it so strictly controlled on the advertising that it cannot be passively advertised. You must push a button to be advertised cannabis in the Netherlands. They can't even make a connection that, you know, cannabis might be like liquor. You know, in 19 states in America, we have state-run or state-controlled liquor stores, yet they can't seem to apply that model. It's got to be 7-Elevens. Oh, and as far as that Alaska legalization thing goes, it wasn't legalization. Their Supreme Court decided in 1975 that they had the right to smoke marijuana in their house thanks to their constitutional privacy protections. So let's call it a very limited decriminalization. You can smoke pot at home. Now, I've debunked that at length on the Stash. Check out stash.normal.org. Put Alaska in the search box. And as I wrote back then, if Alaskan teen marijuana use went up from 1975 to 1979, I wouldn't be surprised, since the teen use of marijuana skyrocketed nationwide from 27% to 36.5% using marijuana monthly in that four-year period. That's an increase of over 34%. So Alaskan teen use would have had to go up more than that to have any consideration that decriminalization had anything to do with it, and it didn't. Now, Alaskans did vote for a recriminalization measure in 1990, 53% to 47%, but that was when nationwide support for legalization was down to 16%. However, the courts invalidated that in 2003, and since then, they've been back to very limited decriminalization. The teen use rates in Alaska continued to fall after that in 2003, even though they got their right back to smoke weed at home. So how come no writing about how the rates went down after marijuana was made legal again in Alaska? Because it doesn't fit your reefer madness, that's why. There's more debunking of that, complete with charts and hyperlinks, and we'll continue a little bit more of it in Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. For Ganja John and Cannabis Carry, I'm Radical Russ. Follow all of us on Twitter and the new Normal Show Live feed, normal_show_live, for updates. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.